three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast, recording this Tuesday, 19th of April at about 11:30 p.m. on the East Coast. My name is Joseph Gore. I'm joined by Andrew Kenyon.
I'm coming in hot. I'm ready to go. I was a bit worn down, but now I'm fired up. All right.
There we go.
Good.
We normally do Patreon Discord stuff. We're going to do that in the middle. We're going to jump straight into content. For people that are new to the show, just by the by, NBL, National Basketball League. We had a motto in the beginning, didn't we, Andrew, where I was the sports media minnow because I kind of work in the sector.
Yep.
And then Andrew was the fan man in the stands.
That's it. But I'm rarely in the stands these days, so I'm more like the fan man having a beer on the couch.
We're going to get a good rhyme for something on the couch. Let's jump straight into it. I want to talk about the Wildcats. We've done a little bit of Wildcat content of late. However, they are the talk of the town. They're a good roster that's under... Actually, I won't put my words into it. How would you describe the Wildcats at present and their season in general, Andrew?
Okay, the Wildcats at present. They are a team who have lost their identity and are relying on a couple of superstars to do work to get them wins, if they come at all. As opposed to earlier in the season, I think they still had vestiges of greatness past, and I think that shine has now tarnished. They need to get the Brasso or the Silvo, give it a bit of a rub, and see if they can channel some old Wildcats basketball back into the team, because what they're doing at the moment is not enough to get it done.
So you don't think they're a contender or a legitimate?
No, they're making up the numbers. Totally making up the numbers.
You're saying a team with Bryce Cotton and Vic Law is just making up the numbers?
Yeah, well, they may not have Vic Law either. That's going to be an interesting one. I'm wondering if they can get – can they get John Brown the third on injury waivers for Vic Law?
For the regular season, sure, but not for the final. Oh, that – now that's all coming back to me. Yeah, that's an issue.
But even with him, there's still major issues. He can score the ball. Don't worry about that. But he seems at loggerheads with his coach a lot of the times. He doesn't seem particularly happy. I think he's feeling the Perth pressure.
Here's the thing. I just have this about the Perth Wildcats. This is still a team that has beaten Melbourne in Melbourne, Illawarra twice, and has come within 3 points of Sydney in Sydney. At the start of the year, we'd said, oh, they're going to look to play more offensively under Morrison. Well, they're doing that. They're the number one offensive rating, and they're a middling defense. Fifth defense. You can't be the number one offense and be the best defense. That's just not how it works. And they're third in EDIF, so they're the third best team by the numbers in the NBL. I'm not as doom and gloom on this team. Are you doom and gloom?
In the context of a Perth team, I'm doom and gloom. You've got to keep it in context. They're still really highly likely that they will make the playoffs. So many other teams would be stoked just with that. I think Perth fans have a slightly different gradient on which they score. So, you know, like, well done, made the finals, but that's to be expected. But what I'm saying is they don't have the capacity at the moment, from what we're seeing, to even challenge, let alone win the final.
Let's talk about that loss to Adelaide. That was probably the worst game the Wildcats have played in. Oh man. Seasons. I can't actually fathom a game that where they were down that big, that early, and lost it. The play that, and thank you to Nick Tan for clipping it up. People follow Nick Tan and find this video. They were down, the Wildcats were down about 12 or 14 points, 7 minutes left in the second half. And right at that point, they were down 14, I think it was. And if they'd got two or three stops and scores, hey, 8-point game, anything can happen, right? And I was watching intently. I was like, this is it. This is the precipice moment. And they gave up a offensive rebound to McCarron. And then Hannes came down and hit a three in transition where Travers was caught behind the play. It was the worst passage of play where they threw up garbage and it came out the other way. It went to 20 and I went, nope, you can't come back from that. That was your chance to make the swing. It was where Perth Wildcat teams of Gleeson, you just knew they were going to come up with a stop. Yes, they were down 14, but they were going to have it down to 8 and then they were going to have it down by 6 into the fourth and they were a chance to win. And this team just didn't fit the Perth groove of that. It was really, that was bad. And I actually switched it off at halftime. Click, off it went. Why do you think they lost to Adelaide? And you did consider that loss a shock, right?
Yeah, it was a shock, although then you see Adelaide go to Sydney and beat them as well, so maybe less of a shock in hindsight. But no, they should have won that. That was a game that was theirs.
They lost so bad.
Taking. They were passive. They were lackadaisical. There was no effort. All the little things that are just intent and mindset, they just didn't have any of that. You know, just like I thought Damian Martin was really good on the sidelines in both games over the weekend. He did a really good job of explaining where the Wildcats were lacking. And it was a lot of it was just in that defensive intensity. They didn't have it. Mm. They didn't care.
Let's talk blame. So is no one to blame? Someone must be to blame. What's the issue, do you think?
The issue is that I want to go back to, you know, I'm the culture guy, right? So yep. I want to talk about human nature. Humans are inherently lazy, okay? So if you don't have somebody riding your ass, forcing you to do something you don't really want to do, which is play defense, right? The team as it's constructed is an offensive team.
Yep.
Right? So to create defense, that's all that effort, and it's about somebody saying, if you don't play defense, you're going to get sat back on the bench. But they don't have that. They don't have a coach. They don't have a mindset. They don't have a team culture of that kind of basketball this season. So people, when they're not pushed to do that, they won't do it. So, and that's what's going to win you and lose you basketball games, particularly in the finals.
Are you putting the blame predominantly at the feet of Scott Morrison?
Yes, I am.
See, I'm not, and maybe this is my philosophy. I think coaches do a good job, but I actually feel like they're quite secondary in this whole thing. If you have good players and you provide a nice little structure and they're self-sustaining and self-inflating almost, they'll take care of themselves. I mean, Morrison, this is what I've got written down here. Morrison has done what he said he was going to do, did what he said on the tin. Number one offense and their defense is middle of the road. That's enough to be upper echelon. And they're still within, they're going to make the finals, but they should be more in that 1-2-3 conversation. They're not in the Sydney, Melbourne, Illawarra conversation.
No.
They're a step behind that. But I have to put this one on the players. And nor do I put it on, I put it more on the players, number one. And I put secondly on their GM, Danny Mills. And then third, Morrison. I quite like Morrison. And when we talk about,
he is a likable guy. This is the interesting and challenging thing about him. He's not an out and out tool. You don't look at him and just go, "Oh, get this guy out of my face." He's kind of likable. He's got a turn of phrase that can be good. You know, he swears like a trooper, which you'll either love or hate. There's a lot to like about him as a person. And when I say he's no good, I'm not saying he's a terrible person. I'm just saying he's a terrible fit for this team.
And you say that because he's too offensively minded, no defense.
Yeah, yeah, and also too distant. He's creating these walls between, whether they're artificial or real, between the players, the coaches, and the head office. There's a lot of talk about it's on the players, they're professionals, their group, and then the coaches. Well, our job is to do this. He never knows the fitness or the health of players because that's the job of the medical staff. He's very, very siloed.
Here's what I'll say. We've heard rumblings and rumors of quite the partition and division of labor at the Wildcats. Players, management, coaching.
Yep.
We've heard those rumors. I think a lot of people have. And you can hear it in the most recent interviews with Michael Frazier, SEN, and a bunch of places. And I encourage people to listen to those. You can tell by his tone. You can tell by his language what's going on. Here's the thing. I with Scott Morrison, he's impassioned. I believe that he shouldn't have to get guys fired up. I really do believe that he's a decent man in an indecent time, if you've seen The Dark Knight. He's brought a knife to a gunfight. Where Gleeson and of the past and Vickerman berate their players, not berate their players, but certainly berate the refs to hold them to a standard and fire up their players on the sideline, you always hear those two. Gleeson more so than Vickerman, but Vickerman has now stepped into the number one chair in Gleeson's absence.
Can I give people a quick interrupt you? Just
yeah, do it.
Can we have that music? The sort of memory music. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, come on. Sorry. Okay. Trevor Gleeson.
What's terrible? And then I think Scott Morrison thought, he forgot that you have to babysit NBL refs because they're just going to let teams play a level of defense that's not North American and not anywhere else. And then the players as well. I think he thought, these are self-starting guys. I think he made a huge mistake. Gleeson held a lot of hands at the Wildcats, the role players in particular. That's what I'm seeing on the floor.
Yep.
So because I don't put a lot of stock in coaches, I've got to do with the players. Here's another thing I want to say. In recent seasons, and you tell me which has been the best replacement. In the recent seasons, the Wildcats have lost Trevor Gleeson, Coach of the Year, bunch of championships, and replaced him with Scott Morrison. They lost Mooney last year.
Yep.
Really underrated screen setter, rebounder, and could score.
Yep.
And they replaced him with, let's say, Vic Law, Matt Hodgson. The other one they've lost, and this is the big one for me, is Jack Bendat. Not only sold the team, but also left this world, unfortunately. And they've replaced him with SEN's Hutchison, who's not as involved, not as present, certainly.
No.
And then the fifth one. Oh, you were saying?
Yeah, not as connected to Perth. I think that's not to be understated there.
Totally. And not as wealthy either, and not as willing to spend as Bendat. Bendat didn't care. Bendat was like
cash to burn.
What did 250? Yeah, what did 500 grand mean to him to get a new import? Didn't care. And then the other one, and this is the one, Damian Martin. And I've got a question mark. Who did they replace Damian Martin with? I know it was not this offseason, but the one before it. But that replacement was kind of done by committee, done by Kevin White was kind of the guy. They wanted Jared Kenny. They got Kevin White. And now that role, and you talk about when defense, we're talking about how the Wildcats have dropped off defensively. I think you look to the lack of a Damian Martin replacement. You say Mitch Norton. Well, Mitch Norton was kind of the backup to Martin. So, yeah, he's coming to that spot. So there's still a hole there. And they haven't made up for it. And everyone knows everyone's going to go out in this league and get an import point guard. So you need someone to guard him real good. And the Wildcats, other than Norton, who's been hurt. And when he got hurt, oh, boy, they look bad. But he did play against Adelaide. They've looked really bad. So I just want people to have a think about that.
This is where the Wildcats, they had a bit of a problem where you might say in hindsight, maybe Damian Martin went on a season too long because what they did, they lost their youth brigade in the backcourt. And we've seen that youth brigade go on and play really well for other teams.
Detch, Swaka.
And Swaka, Both of those guys, they were Wildcats DPs into elevated into the team, started to show a bit of promise, but
couldn't wait and fair to them, they couldn't wait around. And then the other one is, well, Scott Roth is now a great coach, sat behind Gleeson for a long time. If Gleeson had just left a year earlier, you would have had that natural progression to that. So not that that was, they'd still made the finals that year, but that's the thing with, I like Morrison. I think Morrison's a good coach. I think his miscalculation has been putting too much faith in the NBL refs to allow an offensive game to take hold. I mean, in the presser the other day, he was complaining about how Bryce Cotton against Adelaide didn't get a single foul drawn, which is Cotton's normally in the teens in fouls drawn. So I think not riding the refs, this has been his mistake, and then not firing up his own players and kind of reminding them on every possession. Like, I mean, how tight a leash did Gleeson have guys like Steindl, Majuk? He had them on the leash so tight. And I see Majuk in particular make some plays where I'm like, you got to drag that guy. And Hodgson occasionally, and they get more license and it's not working.
The one thing that I also wonder about is whether Morrison has really fully adapted his mindset to the 40-minute game and then the 28-game season. Well, it's 28 games, isn't it? I just think he doesn't. Each possession is so much more valuable in that 40-minute game. And then each game is more valuable in a shortened season. And I just don't think that I feel like he's just willing to let things ride a little more. And it's like, I think that's where the Wildcats previously put such premium on offensive rebounding, because every possession is critical in a 40-minute game. And if you get down 8, 10, 12 points, that's hard work to pull it back.
Sorry to interrupt. Do you have an explanation for these first quarters from the Wildcats?
I have zero. No. No.
It's bizarre. It's
totally weird.
Even against Cairns. They were parity at halftime with Cairns, thereabouts, and then blew them away in the second. Good teams are not going to let you do that. They have to sort out this first quarter issue, and it's an energy thing. I don't know what it is. I wish I could put my finger on it. I can't.
And they've got no. They don't seem to have plays that can get them an easy bucket. Just
that's true.
Can they just forget the pick and roll, high pick and roll stuff? Can they just run a set that gets the ball swinging around? Everybody gets a touch. They run some cuts, and they end up with a layup. Backdoor cut, something like that. Like they just don't seem to have a couple of plays that will just get them an easy bucket.
I agree with that. And then also in the absence of Norton, I thought another miscalculation for Morrison. I know I said I think he's a good coach, but putting the ball in Travis's hand too much. Travis's stocks are NBA stocks, I mean, but they're plummeting. He's doing overextending himself. Before he looked better as a rip and run rebounder, get off the backboard, give it up, get it back and dunk it.
Yep.
Now they're like making him make decisions, and he just doesn't look as confident. I have not, and the numbers reflect it. He's got much greater usage, but very similar stats to last year. So they're not making him pop. I think some say the guy who hasn't escaped a little bit of criticism here is Danny Mills, GM,
general manager.
Is his inexperience showing itself? Inexperience in particular. His background is as a scout and a coach, and now he's over at Perth. And also with this, I feel like the Perth Wildcats, they've lost their identity in the sense that they're kind of imitating the imitators. Sydney have a very young GM in Chris Pongras.
Yep.
His resume, they're almost identical. Video guys. Pongras has got a little bit more managerial background. I think he's a law background, whereas Mills has more come through scouting and things like that. But as far as the nuts and bolts of general managing, and, they're both young guys. Are they getting these guys on the cheap? What? I don't know what's going on.
It's a bit of a change. They've sort of gone away from, I think they've traditionally more had business guys, who just run the business. And the coach has sort of been more involved in the whole playing element of it, whether it be recruiting or, that kind of thing. This split now, they've tried to get some basketball guy in as a general manager, NBA style. I just don't think it's needed in Australian basketball. I think
when you've only got the money to get six or seven good players.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. And I think, Mills would love it. It's a great general manager of the Perth Wildcats.
Oh man, put that on your LinkedIn.
Yeah. Oh man, are you kidding me? It looks great. Some NBA guy short-sighted. Oh, general manager. Yeah, you can. Bang, it's great credit. So fair play to Danny Mills. But you look at the Brown thing. Frazier. I want to talk about Frazier. And we're going to get off the Wildcats. People who aren't Wildcat fans. We're going to talk. Frazier had that great game against Cairns. 19 points. Woohoo! You scored 20 points against Cairns. I'm not. My skirt's still not blown up. It took him three quarters of the season, and people are like, "Oh, got to reward his professionalism." A professional import doesn't take three quarters of the season to put up his first good game.
Yep.
Sorry. What's been the Frazier deficiency? Why has he been poor? And then the other part of the question is, can he be good?
I think he can be reasonable. I think he can. Between he and Blanchfield, you'd think maybe now they can competently hold down the three-man spot between the two of them. Is it enough? No, it's just pretty much what every other team has had throughout the season. I mean, he's no better or worse. At his best, no better or worse than Cleveland and Ratan Mays. No better or worse than, maybe worse than Jarrell Martin and so on. I think that's not enough. He's great. Yeah, good job, good performance, and well done him sticking with it. But, you can have a good game every now and then, you would hope, over a season.
I just don't know.
And there's a few things about Frazier as well that still had me a little worried. Still a few sort of boneheaded decisions. Attacking when he shouldn't attack, a bit loose with the ball.
Against Cairns.
That fast break where Bryce Cotton was, lobbed it to him at the rim and he flared out to the 3-point line. Like basketball 101 is when you're on a fast break, hit the rim, that's and I think they highlighted it on the telecast, the fact that at one point Bryce was trying to set a screen for him to run off.
Yeah, he just stood there.
That was a really good insight. I think that was Liam Santamaria who picked that. So. But really good point. Just not Still not alert.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I'm still not convinced. I mean, and the thing that is with the whole roster construction, we've had patrons describe it as a disaster. And that's probably a little bit extreme, but I think that what you can say categorically and definitively is that they know a mistake was been made. You wouldn't make a move if you didn't think there was a mistake made. They knew they made a mistake. And the other thing as well, they're not trading like for like. They're not going Frazier for a different guard because Frazier's been down or forward. They've gone wholesale swap. Guard, big guy.
But this was
an admission of guilt.
I reckon 8,000 of the 12,000 Wildcat members could have called this after three weeks of the regular season. So why it took them so long, you know, we've gone over this ground. I think it's probably
we've killed
it to death. I want to ask you one last thing on the Wildcats, okay?
Do it.
Is Bryce Cotton past his peak?
Oh, come on, stop.
Was last year his peak? Or maybe before he got injured in the league? You know,
no, I don't think so.
Do you think he...
And that's why, no, I still think they're good, Andrew. I still think they can really surprise the team. I think they're going to... Well, we're going to jump ahead a bit, but they play Illawarra on Friday in Perth. I think they're going to win that game.
Okay.
And I think that's the catalyst for things just to calibrate slightly. No, they've got talent. If they lose Vic Law, they're done. That's of course, because who comes in to play for him? Majuk?
Yeah. Jack Wagstaff, Burgess. It's your time.
Jack Burgess, Oliver Rathan Mays, and whatever the guy's name, whatever his name is, the guy with the mullet.
Oh, yeah.
They're done. They're done. If that happens. But if Law is healthy and good, I think they'll win. I think they had to beat up on someone, and that was Cairns. And they looked really good in the second half. They shot, and they didn't play any D again, but they shot well. And I think they're going to be – I still think this team's good on paper, and I can't go by – I know it's played on hardwood, not on paper, but I still like them. One last thing on the Wildcats, though. We've got a question from a patron, Nick Tan. If they don't make the playoffs –
Yep.
Who's to blame? Who gets sacked was the direct
quote. Good question.
I mean, that is 35 years. You have one change. You have a change of coach and GM, and in the first year they don't make it with what would be a very high spend.
Yep.
Whatever.
My initial answer to that was I don't think this ownership group cares so much about the streak. I think this is now a something that people care about, the fans care about way more than the current ownership. Having said that, I would expect there would be pitchforks, and I think if the playoff streak ends, Morrison's time in the Wildcats also ends with it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. And then Mills as well. You'd be thinking you've had a good spend.
I reckon he'd escape sanctions. I think he would.
Well,
duck and weave.
Here's why I think he wouldn't. Here's why I think he wouldn't, because you had all these. I mean. But the thing is, the Wildcats would be losing out to Tasmania, a team with much lower expectations, presumably much lower spend.
It's Wildcats light.
Wildcats light, and their first thing. So that was the other mistake they made. They got pilfered by the Jack Jumpers. the whole coaching staff.
Yep.
Steindl, Magne, who didn't play, but still they.
Jared Bairstow.
Yeah, I forgot him. Yep, true. In answer to that question, what would happen? I think you'd be looking at, obviously Morrison. It always starts and ends with the coach, but I still think some of the players, and what I'd be looking at is under contract for the Wildcats going into next year, Norton, Cotton, Travers, Majuk has a team option. Purchase, what's that kid's name? Shervil?
Corey Shervil.
Zunich, Hayes Brown. Wiggle room is on these guys. Jesse Wagstaff, you bring him back. If he wants to play, you just give him a contract. He's a good
player.
Blanchfield. If you're going to shore up your defense, there's the spot. And also, when Blanchfield was signed, it was because they went from 3 to 2 imports. They couldn't bring back Tirico, not that they wanted to, and they brought him in as a substitute. Now that situation has changed. He's the guy you're looking to probably upgrade on at both ends of the floor, more consistency, better defense. So Blanchfield would probably find it hard. Kevin White just hasn't had a good year as a backup. There are other backups out there, like a Jared Weeks is always available. Law, what do you think? If they don't make it, is Vic Law the guy you're going with long term?
No, I think you've got to move on. I think Vic Law is a great scorer. I don't think he gives enough all over the court. I think you need more defense. You need more rebounding. He's an awesome player, but I just don't think he fits.
Even in Morrison's offense. That's the thing. If they did what Morrison said and just said, hey, score the ball as much as you can, they'd win more games.
Mm.
But they don't play D and they don't... Anyway, Frazier, obviously, they'd move on from. You can't restore that after the year. Matt Hodgson. They love to roll the ball into Hodgson. Boy, oh boy, do they love it. They just get him in the pick and roll and they treat him like he's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I do not understand it. Matt Hodgson, to me, is a permanent backup center. You know, I've never seen him as starting quality. And never, ever. And maybe that's my problem. Maybe I've seen too much of Matt Hodgson over the years. I just don't see his value anymore. But, well, God, it worries me. There's no way a championship team has Matt Hodgson as their starting center. Give me a break.
And Majuk, that's the thing. Everyone says, oh, the rebounding's bad. Hodgson and Majuk are your bigs.
Yeah.
I thought Majuk played really poorly in both games. Bless his heart, I just didn't see it. And that's a guy you're relying on to back up Matt Hodgson, the most foul-prone big guy. And Hodgson did it again. There were some fouls in cans that just...
He almost lost his temper and threw the ball into the crowd at one point.
Yes. On the clearest foul I've ever seen in my life. The worst I thought was when he missed out on a rebound of Nate Jawai. And then just plowed him in the backcourt to give up his third. And I thought, oh, man. Yeah, and the small ball thing just hasn't quite – they drop too badly. Anyway,
mate, that's enough of Wildcats Pocket Podcast.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. So, yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on.
Sorry, everybody.
Josh Giddey. Let's go way away from Perth.
Josh Giddey.
Has not been named as a Rookie of the Year finalist. Can I just go on a big spiel here?
I want you to because, you know me. I don't follow NBA close enough to talk
here
to
we go. Andrew, sit this one
take
out.
Take the floor.
Ladies, here we go. Josh Giddey has not been named as a Rookie of the Year finalist. He's missed 28 games. That's 34% of the season. So therefore, missing out on it as a finalist should not come as any surprise. Giddey had good numbers. However, OKC only won 24 games, which was good enough for the fourth lowest tally in the association. His numbers, 12.5 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, 6.4 assists, 42% from the field. And this is in a year that the NBA tunneled through major COVID hardships and had a record number of midseason signings, players on hardship call-ups, if you remember, 3-4 months ago. Bit players and ballers long retired got call-ups. In January, on this podcast, I recorded an episode with Ryland Stiles from OKC Thunder Media Team. And I made the comparison between Giddey and Michael Carter-Williams, who in his rookie year, 16.7 points per game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 40.5% from the field. That was in 2013-14. What's interesting, Andrew, if you're still there, is...
I am. Sorry, I'm just listening intently.
Oh, you're good. You're good. 8 years ago, when Michael Carter-Williams was named Rookie of the Year, the 76ers at that time were accused of stat skewing for playing a league-leading 99.2 in pace. And tanking to 19 wins, which has really split the difference, about 24 anyway. To put that, this is what's interesting, to put that pace in perspective, this is how fast the NBA's become. 99.2 possessions per game. Yep. In that season, 8 years ago, that was good enough for first.
Yep.
Nowadays, that would be tied 10th in pace. And the Thunder play a very similar pace, just a fractionally slower pace to that 76ers team of 8 years ago. Now, I don't know if this is a fair stat or not. When we talk about, people say, we were talking about Morrison before and playing two offensive minded, two NBA. The top five pace setters, of the top five pace setters in the NBA, only five are in the playoffs. Of the bottom 10, eight are in the playoffs. So I don't know if that's fair, but.
So you're saying slow it down. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the slower the team, the more likely they are in the playoffs.
Yep.
That's the pace race in a nutshell. And I bring this all up because Giddey, it's interesting. Sam Presti gave an exit interview today in which he kind of said, a media member asked him, "Are you feel bad that the Thunder are a black eye in the league because they tank?" And then he went on a big tirade about, that's opinion, not fact. You don't know what you're talking about. You won 24 games. And here's the thing as well. Whew, sorry.
It's good, man.
But back to Giddey and the Thunder. In 2019-20, OKC had Chris Paul on their roster, who just played an amazing game yesterday.
What is he like, 64 years old now or something?
36, soon to be 37. The oldest player ever to have 30 points and 10 assists in a playoff game. They had Chris Paul on their roster just 2 years ago. This is a top 20 player in NBA history. And at that time, they won 44 games with him and really nothing. And Sam Prested traded Chris Paul for four players, none of which are still with the team, and the pick that would become Giddy. And Paul went to the Suns, who were a 34-win team at the time.
Yep.
Admittedly, better than 24, but have now made the finals once, losing the final, and are now looking like they're going to do not only make it, but potentially favorite to win it, no less.
Can I just interrupt and just say, that stat about four players traded, no longer with them and all that, that to me tells me that this whole general manager thing is an entire huge scam. They trade players like they're at a casino table. They're just throwing things at the roulette wheel and hoping it sticks.
And fans buy the lie.
Oh my gosh.
Fans buy it of, oh, we're rebuilding. I'll wear it. It's like, are you joking? You had Chris Paul.
Yeah.
So anyway, no. And
sorry. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're quite right. The Suns, you're quite right. The Suns in the 2 years they've had Chris Paul have gone 51, 21, 64 and 18. They're eight games away from being a 72 and 10 like Jordan. And they're $3.10 favorites for the championship. That's Phoenix Suns. What I'm getting at with all this is Giddy may just be the future, but Chris Paul is the now. And Oklahomans have been fed a lie, and Australians a slight exaggeration.
Yep.
Too much? Too much? I don't think it's too much.
I don't think it's too much at all. And I think you're right. I think everybody, they always look to the next thing. Can't you just enjoy it? Like, enjoy what you have in front of you.
But we retool now. Around Chris Paul. Yeah. To retool around Chris Paul. Anyway, they've made a mess of it. I want to say this, though. This is Josh Giddey, and I like Josh Giddey. He's quite a good player. I think he's going to make a really good sort top line solid starter on and potentially a good backup on a winning championship team, maybe even a starter on that team. But, could be a good player. However, you know, this bugged me, this whole thing about the tanking and, oh, we're not tanking. It's like, yes, you are. You're shamelessly tanking, and every game you played this year was despicable and horrible to watch. Also, Josh Giddey, he's come back to Australia, right?
Yes.
And everyone's like, oh, he hasn't lost touch.
He's signing kids' foreheads.
he's a good kid. An evening with Josh Giddey. Tickets are $233. My question to you, Andrew Kenny, would you pay $230 to have an evening with Josh Giddey?
With a 19-year-old
stranger? A 19-year-old stranger?
No.
I don't want to laugh at people who bought a ticket. Pay me $230.
I'm sorry. There is nothing that Josh Giddey could tell me about the world that wouldn't enlighten me so much that I would feel good about spending $233.
No. Maybe you get a meal and some drinks. I'm sure they put on a great show, but
depends on the plate drop. If I get the steak, I'm okay. If I get the chicken, I'm super disappointed.
Oh, if you get the fish, you're storming up. I'll say this. Tickets are $233. The Waterview Hotel here in Sydney holds about 912 in a banquet setting. I know. I looked it up. $233 times 910. Well, how is your mental arithmetic? Not good. $314,000 for one night's work. He's doing three or four nights. He's making about $1 million and a bit bucks. Gross revenue.
Yeah.
He's got three hours at a time.
Coming out of that.
So that's $1 million for 9 hours work. That's not bad.
You know what this tells? You know what this tells me? The NBL Pocket Podcast tour, the live tour. Okay, we're going to take that Patreon money. We're going to reinvest it in some banquet dinners, and we're going to pack the place out.
233. You'll get a pack of crisps, some sushi. And a punch in the face. Yep. And
we'll give you a USB drive with all our past podcasts on it.
Yeah, you can have them. I tell you what, I'd lap dance one person. So the numbers go into a hat.
Silent
auction.
Pull
one out. Silent auction. Exactly. Let's move on. I want to say this quickly. Rob Lowe had a really good game, 27 points, career high against Tasmania. They almost won that one. New Zealand is so snake bit.
Oh, man. Just,
like, at this point, it's like when you're bullying someone and they start embracing being the bully, so you beat them up more. Not that I've ever done that, but they're just so pathetic at this point. Bless them. They just want the season to end.
They're just letting players leave. Yeah. I want out. Yeah, sure. Off you go. We don't care.
We'll take the buyout money. Keep the lights from flicking off. On Throwback Hoops with Woody and Rob.
Yep.
I'd say that I predicted Rob Lowe to win sixth man. Seems ridiculous. Even now. Of course, he's not going to win it, but he could have had a good year. Played 29 minutes in this game to post the career high. His minutes have been up and down like a yo-yo. I feel stupid making that prediction, but he just hasn't had the year he would have wanted, they would have wanted. Seemed to fall out of the rotation of Shamir. I think Rob Lowe's a good player. big who can stretch it. I thought he was going to get 20 minutes a game, you know, because Delaney would play 30. Wetzel would play 30. That leaves 20 minutes for him, maybe a bit more, a bit less, depending on foul trouble. And I thought he was going to do something. Hasn't done it at all.
I think all those minutes went to Jeng.
Yeah, Jeng and Besson and whoever else. Let's move on. The Kings.
Hang on, before we move on, I just want to talk about Breakers because we've got a we had a question, a Patreon question. So we may as well dive into that while we're talking New Zealand. It's from Jono Slade. I know Jono. Good friend of mine.
Great name.
New Zealand Breakers. He said, you know, where are we at with them? I reckon the questions I have in New Zealand, right, and where this is, I think, really hurt them over the long term, what this season's going to do to them, I think it's the psychological damage to the local New Zealand basketball scene, right, and the New Zealand players on that team. That's where I'm seeing the damage being wrought. So Finn Delaney looks like he's got PTSD.
Request.
He is just looking terrible. And will he bounce back? At the same time, you've got Tom Abercrombie. Has he burnt the last of his juice? You know, like
he said, his good games are spotty.
Yeah, and he's getting old now. You know, like he's towards the tail end of a career. And is this it for him? And then the big question I've got is, how have the young New Zealand locals developed without being part of the train-on squad? Like usually you'd wheel in a bunch of young New Zealand kids to be there during training days and that kind of thing, right? Upskill them, get them a taste of it. They haven't had that. That's been absent for best of 2 years now. So how much is that going to regress the team over the longer term? Just not developing that youth.
It just, and also you said it before, players leaving. It looks like they're looking to recoup some of the lost ticket sales with buyout money. Yep. Besson and Dieng to come, and obviously Wetzel most recently. You know, I don't know how much they'd get for that, but I would have thought it'd be a quarter of the contract, so a couple of $100,000 I would have thought.
And look, it's smart business. This season was just going to be a write-off. They decided it was a write-off pretty early on, and they said, well, how can we best recover? Let's make these young kids look good.
I think you said it before as well. Here's my worry. It's now the second year where a team that's based in New Zealand has just been totally absent. And I think it entrenches that idea. And I remember ages ago reading a couple of tweets or emails from people from New Zealand who just said, oh, that's the, we love our NZBL. That's the ABL. We, you know, it's a nice thing. We want the team to do well, but we kind of have our own competition going on. I think this just puts such a divide of, and, you know, people in Sydney feel, or Perth feel sort of, oh, it's the MBL.
Yeah, yeah.
They feel disconnected from, imagine from across the ditch.
Yep.
So it just puts a huge cavity in between that team, that club, and this and the league. And it's really bad. I think there's actually going to be a, hopefully they can sort of rally the New Zealanders against the MBL and just the whole league and just be like, we're our team. They've screwed us for the last 2 years, no more. They're going to need to do that because it's hard to just be absent for be off the shelf for 2 years and then come back and say, hey, you want a membership for a couple of grand? Remember us?
Yep.
So they got to do some fine work there. But they got an awesome social team who, by the way, side note, the social team have been tapped on the shoulder that a couple of weeks ago, months ago maybe.
Yep.
Just tone it down. They got a slap on the wrist. they were going crazy.
They went a bit quiet then, didn't they? It all just...
Yeah.
Radio silence on the NZ Breakers.
They were getting, everyone was high five. We were kissing their ass. Oh my God, you're so good.
Yep.
And then someone had to come and spoil the fun at NBL HQ, I'm sure.
Fun police.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had swearing in their memes. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
No, anyway, they're slightly, just ever so fractionally coming back. So good luck to them.
Do you know what? I love them. I love their media team. And I got to say, I tweeted, they said something, they came back and I sent them back a message saying, awesome to see you back. Yeah, so good. Yeah, you're back off this out of the sin bin. And they replied back to me and just said, bing bong. which was the tweet that got them in all the trouble.
which was
that gif with the guy in the car. And
they went for it. I like people who swing for the fences. They struck out, but they swung for the fence. Do you want to talk about the Jack Jumpers or do you want to talk about the Sydney Kings?
Jack Jumpers.
All right. This is a sort of a coach of the year Jack Jumpery conversation. The Jack Jumpers are 6-11. Sorry, 16-11. They're over under at the start of the year. Do you remember what it was?
It was like six or something.
6.5 and you took the under. And I took the over.
Did I?
I'm not
bragging.
Why did
you record that?
I took the over, but only because I was like, they've already won. My rationale was, well, they've already won one. They can win six more. Not did I think they were going to get in the teens alone.
It's been amazing.
For heaven's sake. Scott Roth, is there any conversation he's coach of the year? This was a bit of a Twitter thing today.
Yeah, I saw some people talking about Vickerman should really be in for a run of it.
I'm going to make the case for Vickerman in a second.
Okay,
are you on the Roth camp?
I am totally on the Roth camp. He's built something.
Do you think people who think Vickerman are silly? John Casey and myself.
You're entitled to your views. You're not silly. You're just wrong.
Okay. I'd prefer to be silly. Go on. Tell me, Scott Roth. The case is obvious, but make it. Let's hear
it. Here's a guy that he went there and they didn't have basketballs. They didn't have a logo. They had nothing. They didn't have paper. They didn't have a printer. Like, you're starting from scratch. You're not just building a team, you're building an organization. And in a place that hasn't had a team before, that doesn't understand what it means to be a supporter of a professional team. So he's built all that. He's got players off the scrap heap, the players that nobody else wanted. They were chumps.
I'm going to jump in. I'm going to stop you there.
He's getting warmed up.
Keep going. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was building an evocative story.
I'm so sorry.
Scott Roth realizes
let's pick back up at scrap heap.
He needs to zig when the rest of the league is zagging, right? So everybody's going to let's get these ISO players. Let's get the pick and roll offense. Let's get some good scores. Let's get some really sexy players. What does he do? He gets Fabian Krizlovich and Jared Bairstow and says, I'm going to set some screens and I'm going to run some plays and I'm going to get a team bought in on a culture. You know how I feel about culture. I am the culture guy.
It's not just in a pot of yogurt.
Scott Roth has built an entire culture. He's got the whole team bought in and that creates wins. I don't care about the numbers or the quality of the players. When they're all bought in playing for each other, they are winning basketball games on the back of that.
You let me know when you're done.
The island's behind them. The mainland's behind them. We all love Jack Jumpers. That is all Scott Roth, coach of the year.
Okay.
Done. I'm done.
Perth fans. Okay. First of all, when you say building a culture, they didn't build a culture. They plagiarized one. Okay. They took the whole Wildcat staff and most of their bench and players.
Great artist steal.
Good artist copy, great artist steal. That's very true. However, and then they gutted their bit. And look, it's no surprise that who's nipping at the heels of the Wildcats? Tasmania Jack Jumpers. Do we have? I've always thought Steindl was a really good player. Chris Golding on a beer budget.
Yep.
He can shoot like crazy. You and I were singing his praises for a long while. You and I were saying Jack McVay, underused in Adelaide. We were saying it 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And now he's coming having a good year. Are you surprised by the year Jack McVay's had? I'm not.
No, I'm happy for him.
Very happy. Krizlovich, I quite liked him in Cairns. I didn't think he was a star, but I thought he was a good player. And then Will Magno, they had for a while, who sat out for a while. But they were all good players. So they didn't have this. What I want to ask the question is, did people just misevaluate this roster? I think there was a bit of wind tunnel going on where one person said, I think this shit. And it just went on down the line. And, Top Sport bought into it and a whole bunch of people bought into it. But I think people, as I've said before in the past, did people scout those two imports well? Josh Adams has been really, really good. And we didn't scout him. We didn't have the capacity to, but did people miss scout this team? Was there talent and people just didn't see it?
Yeah, well they're unfashionable. They're not cool players. They're meat and potato dudes. Even their imports, they're solid imports. They're not super flashy, except when maybe Majet tries to launch a three from beyond NBA.
Jets, fearless. And Josh Adams is super. I mean, we were talking about most athletic and Pinder.
Yeah.
Josh Adams, that block and a couple of those plays, he's very small.
He's figured it out, man. Like, for the first third of the season, he didn't really know what he was. He didn't know what the league was. He has put it all together now, and that guy is just motoring. And I think I said a few weeks ago on this podcast that I would have him back, but maybe not Majet. I've changed my tune. I want them both back. I want both those imports to come around again. You can upgrade on McIntosh.
I've quite liked McIntosh, man. He's a bully. He can bang his way into the hoop. I quite like McIntosh. Always kind of have. Thought he was clumsy, but I've always quite liked him. And people who think I'm jumping on the wagon, you can go back and listen. I swear to God. But the one surprise to me has been Matt Kenyon. He was a guy who we didn't think would play, and he's been really, really good.
Yep.
Here, I want to go back to Roth. Okay, so here's the other thing. Roth, NBL HQ would not be wanting to give this guy Rook of the Year. This guy totally tore up the next star program, right? And Dean Vickerman is the first guy, and I know Huck Porty's a really good player.
Yeah.
But on paper.
Imagine him and Tassie. Ooh, man, yeah, without Matt Nay, having Huck Porty, jeez.
Gleason. Vickerman is the first guy to take a next start and get them to play well and impactfully on a winning team. People are going to say Luzada. I say Lunada. Okay, did nothing. Huck Porty, good. Whereas Scott Roth would make no friends at NBL HQ. Mikulovski, total flame. People would be very, very cross with him about that because that just nosedives the next star program. You've got Mojave King nosedive, Mikulovski nosedive, Terry Armstrong nosedive. They wouldn't like that. So that's a tick for Vickerman. A small tick, but I want to get it out there.
Okay.
Also, both teams have defied expectations. I thought Melbourne were going to be garbage.
So did
I. And Top Sport had their over-under at, I think, 16.5, below Sydney, below Illawarra, below Perth, and by quite some margin, and out of the finals. They had Sydney, Melbourne,
Perth, Phoenix
ahead of them. And Phoenix. Thank you. Andrew Canyon, Phoenix were at 18.5 wins and we took the over. We bought it.
Stupid Phoenix.
So Melbourne have defied the critics by 3, Tasmania by 10. Big margin. But however, Tasmania still aren't going to the playoffs. Melbourne are the number one team. And there could be an argument said that I think it's more difficult to go from the fifth seed to be the fifth, middle of the table, to the very best of the table and lock it up, you know, only one or two games before the end of the season. But to go from fifth to first is, I think, more impressive than going from 10th to fifth.
Non-existent to fifth, my friend. Non-existent.
I don't buy this non-existent thing. They're not non-existent because they're a plagiarism, a cheap forgery of the Wildcat. They didn't cultivate nothing. Roth had a whole year before the thing to mill around and work it out, pilfer these players. He came from a program. No, that's where I'm not buying this whole built a new culture thing. They copied one. Okay, the whole roster, the whole coaching stuff is from the Wildcats. For sake. Now, here's the other thing as well. I didn't like United's roster on paper. They lost Landau, who's now in the NBA, big player.
Yep.
Put in JLA. JLA's gone through the roof. If you want to talk about a coach of the year developing players, JLA hasn't just gone from, you know, and bless him, you know, let's say Jack McVay. Jack McVay's gone from a big, big bench player to a, you know, starter and big-time role player.
Yep.
But Joel Alachil's probably going to finish third or fourth in MVP. You're going to have Cotton Adams. And then is he right there? He kind of dropped off a bit, but he's still there.
Mm.
So that's something for him. They've only had one import in Agata who replaced Hobson. Hobson's a better player and they're still better. And their bench is average. Peatling, Newley, Prewster, Barlow. And then obviously he's got Adele Vadova. I think there's a really strong case. John Casey feels that way. I hate to play ace in the hole, trump card there. That's it.
That's all I got. Well, what do people think? Let us know.
Let us know on Twitter. Yeah, gosh and bother. I think that's it. Yeah. The biggest, I'd say this, the Jack Jumper's biggest off-season success wasn't picking out players and whatever else and signing Matt Kenyon or whatever. It's making the Wildcats pay overs for Mitch Norton. They didn't want to pay that much. They wanted to get something a bit different. This was a real bargaining move where Tasmania really punked the Wildcats. Yep. And it's no surprise that it's Wildcats.
And I think it's worked out best for them because they've gotten two really good imports in the backcourt. And I don't think they needed Mitch Norton.
No. No, I don't think they ever had the ambition to sign him. I think they just tried to force up the figures. Jack Jumper.
Genius.
What do you want? Kings? Let's talk Kings.
All right.
13-game win streak came to an end. Did you watch the game?
I did. Yeah. I did. What'd indeed. Kings just couldn't really be bothered, I thought. I mean, they were injured. You know, they were missing missing Martin and Glover.
Who's their second, third best player.
Yep.
Glover, their best guy off the bench.
But really, they just didn't really care enough. And I think Adelaide came in with their tails up. They all have something to prove at this point because they want, you know, they're playing for their next contract. Mm. And they came out and played really well. And I love it. I'm here for it. I love seeing Dusty Hannes show us what the player he could have been this entire season. It's been great.
Can play.
Can Yeah, Hannes can play it. The other sneaky, real good thing about this game is the PA system and the system. I love quiet basketball. God, I loved it
as well. This made me howl. I had a cackle when it was funny. In the commentary, Gaze and I want to say Shane Heal are like, you know what's great about the Sydney production? They don't drown you out with the music. So tip of the cap to the production team in-game at the Sydney Kings. You're doing a great job, really. And then next thing you know, I think it was Brad Rosenberg. So he goes, yeah, and by the way, guys, the PA's broken. That's why.
That's too funny.
It's like we prefer a technical issue to what you endeavor to do creatively.
I wish the Wildcats would take a leaf out of that book. If I could find the extension cord for the Wildcats PA system, man, I would be unplugging that thing in an instant. Just let me hear the players, please.
Just that idea of if you didn't come to work, things would be better. I feel bad. It's not fair. A lot of people saying, oh, Adelaide had the same schedule as the Kings and had injuries to best. No, not like terms. The Kings are on a 13-game win streak. That's just so mentally taxing.
Yep.
Martin's a much better player than best, obviously. And also, this is the most important one, they went to overtime with Illawarra, 2 days before that? Even Antonius Cleveland was cramping in that game. Guys were cramping big time because that was such an intense game. Yeah. That went to overtime.
Yep.
It was clear. I don't know if
yeah.
This would have been a good one to bet on. I don't know if people were smart enough to go, oh, I think Martin's going to miss with knee soreness. I think overtime. I don't know what the odds were on Adelaide. NBL betting's never great, but this would have been a good one to get on. You still like the Kings, though? Do you think they're the title favourite?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yep.
You think really more so than Melbourne?
Yeah, I do. I think they've got more.
Hang on now. I've got to take you to task here. Just before we're talking about the Wildcats, you're saying they don't play defense. Melbourne play the best defense in the NBL by a long way. And you're like, no, I still like the Sydney Kings more. But please explain.
I just feel like when you're playing the Sydney Kings, you're playing a game of whack-a-mole. Yeah, you got guys just popping up. Who's going to do any one of those players on the court can hurt you at any point in time. They don't have a weak spot, except when Sean Bruce steps on the court.
You are mean. He had a horrible stat line. He had a stat line for the ages. Noughts and then just a negative 11 turnovers, fouls. Yeah.
Beyond that, though, you know, you can't help off anybody. And then they bring, like, Ian Clark comes in off the bench. It's like ridiculous. That guy's just a killer shooter. I just don't know how you keep him down for two games.
I think Melbourne are the favourites, right? Because the NBL is just a defensive league. The refs let you get away with so much. No ref in a final series is going to have the balls to turn to Dellavedova, a guy that probably had his poster up on their wall, falling asleep too long into the eyes of, and they're going to call him for a foul. No, Melbourne are going to be allowed to set every defensive temperature, and it's underhanded, but it's going to work.
Yeah,
it's going to work. And I think Shai Ilie's just playing that good a defense.
He is.
Imagine
well.
Adams, 5-game series, Shai Ilie, Dellavedova, Shai Ilie, oh my God, turning you in the backcourt constantly, bumping you, pushing you, squeezing your nuts, man. Oh, I just resign. I just quit. Who gives? No, I disagree with you on that one, but there's a strong case for the Kings.
Yeah.
If you're the Wildcats, I know we're coming back to it, but who would you rather see make first spot? Illawarra, who would Illawarra rather play? Who would Perth rather play at a chance to nip at the post?
Ooh, I think Illawarra would rather play Melbourne.
Ooh.
Just seeing, I mean, that the last game they played against Sydney was epic. But I just...
I think the opposite.
Yeah. And
I think Illawarra wants Sydney just because Gorgian, young coach, less travel. Cleveland had a horrible game. Horrible. 0-9 or something. That's not going to happen again. So if they can play a bit better defense, they're in with that one. So no, yeah. I'd do it the other way. I think, and Perth, Melbourne, maybe there's some hoodoo there.
I don't know. Too hard to answer, really.
Just a departure here. We're going to go into a question from a patron. And by the way, if you're enjoying the show, do consider becoming a patron. You can find it in the link below or go to the website, www.mblpocketpodcast.com, and find it there. We'd appreciate it. This one's from Matthew Morris. And the topic is frustrating shooting stats. Matthew makes a keen point. Effective field goal percentage is way down. And here's how down it is. Last season, 8 of the 9 teams in the league were above 50% in effective field goal percentage. This season, only 6 of 10 are over that margin.
Okay.
At a glance, it looks like shooting's down about 5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but add that on game.
Yep.
It's not a good look.
Do you have an answer?
From 80% to 60%. Do I have an answer? My simple answer is just COVID. I don't think the talent has dropped off. In fact, talent's increased because there's more imports. So it must be the only variable then is COVID disrupting practice, also physical. If you've got COVID or coming back from COVID, that would. But I think more than anything, disrupting schedules, traveling, so on and so forth. I can't think of anything else. It's an obvious and easy answer. Do you think there's anything else?
Can I give you another answer?
Yeah, I
think there's been a changing of the guard in terms of the coaching and the systems being played. I think we've seen, you've got new James Duncan, you've got Scott Morrison, you've got Sydney guy, Chase Buford. So, name escaped me.
Chet.
Let's not go there again. That got us into trouble last time.
Sorry. You can't
Mr. Buford.
You can abuse fat people in the crowd, but you can't do that. Go on.
So CJ, a lot of new coaches, right? A lot of new systems. I think it takes a while for those structures to be learnt by the players. And so I think particularly in the early, third of the season, maybe not getting the same quality of shots that you would normally get in a team that has had some consistency and rolling out the same sort of structure year after year. That's a potential change up as well.
The NBL's always been such a turbulent league. Teams turning over, coaches turning over. I think it's probably a combination of both.
Yeah.
But I'd lean towards COVID. But yeah.
I wasn't going to give the same answer as you.
No, of course not. That would be fun. Speaking of which, jumping on, I wanted to do this. If a NBA guy came to you and said, I need 5-6 guys from the NBL and a lineup too, not just any of five, a lineup of NBL guys to compete in the NBA. Who would be the five you'd take? This is not necessarily all NBL first team. This is which guys would make it. Give me your criteria of who you selected and why.
All right. So this is what we're talking about here is guys that most would be capable of playing in that NBA environment. Okay. All right. I've got a list here, but I prevaricate a little because you said five, right? Really hard. Yeah. So I've picked a five, and then I picked a sixth man, and then I picked a couple of subs. Maybe just in case.
Yeah. Honorable mentions.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So in my center position, I had JLA as my center.
I just thought he's too physically, you get overpowered.
Yeah, well, that's where I had my first backup. I had Yanni Wetzel coming off the bench.
Oh, I see. I think Yanni get killed on D2. No, I'm off. I'm off the Canyon 5. But
all right. But the culture of this team is unbelievable.
Oh, the culture's great.
Do you want me to go through my whole list?
Yeah.
Power forward, I've got Jarrell Martin.
Okay.
And then
we got some departures here. Good name. Jarrell Martin's a good player.
And then just in case, backing up him, I've got a Duop Reith.
Yeah, I see Reith. My stocks are low. I'm not mad about Reith.
Small forward, I've got Vic Law.
Oh, okay.
And then backing up him, I've got Franks. Vic Law light.
Vic Law.
Then shooting guard, I've got Bryce Cotton. Point guard, Jalen Adams.
Small backcourt, but I got the same, yeah.
And then sixth man, Chris Golding.
Okay, see.
Because I've seen him do it. I've seen him go out there and shoot the ball. You know, like.
I just think your team might be able to score a little bit, but I just...
They get destroyed.
They cannot defend them. My criteria for this one was...
It's a Melbourne Tigers-style offense.
Yeah, true. No, that's true. I think that my criteria was you got to have guys who are physically capable. Just physically strong enough to maintain that level of endurance and athleticism.
Right.
And then also they need to be able to defend their position. Okay. As much as that NBA doesn't play a lot of defense, if you are a weak defender, they will destroy you. They'll just headhunt you in a pick and roll and just keep going at you and dunk on your head. For that reason, under that criteria, this is the five I chose.
Right.
And I actually had to go a little bit undersized, which is not good defensively, but it's what I did anyway.
It's the modern From NBA, top to bottom. I suppose.
Yeah, well, exactly. I went with Cooks, Law, Creek, Adams, and Cotton. Cooks was
a strange admission. That's really small.
Yeah, Jokic will bang you around and Embiid, yeah, but he bangs around everyone. So, you know, you get it on the back end. But I think Cooks and Creek, I think, have to be there. Cooks can't shoot from the outside, which is a worry.
Yep.
Creek neither, but I just think physically they can actually get at the rack and actually hang with the bodies.
Yeah, they're going to intimidate some people. If arm wrestle, they're right there for it, aren't they?
Yeah, and Creek going at the basket is as big as strong as – he's not as athletic, but he's as big and strong as most guys in the NBA.
Yep.
And then the sort of honorable mentions I had were JLA. And then I had, just because he could compete athletically, was Keanu Pinder. I know this sounds ridiculous because I'm leaving a lot of names on the table, but I just thought, here's a guy who can compete athletically on the floor. And he would pick up the style of pace as it went on, but he can actually contest guys at the hoop. He can actually dunk on someone. You know, Chris Golding, I just feel like, yeah, he'd hit a couple of threes, but guy, imagine really big, tall, long defenders on him. I just think he'd be destroyed. So that's my five.
Yeah,
that's our 10, really. I hope people liked it.
Yeah, I cheaped out a little bit with my bench unit in.
Yeah. People at home, jump on Twitter. Give us your NBLX, NBA 5. It could be fun. Where are we going to next? Have we got anything?
We've got next round.
Yeah, let's go to the next round. We're going to wrap this up
relatively early. Hang on. One more thing. I just want to talk about real quick, because I'm conscious of our time. We're going for an hour now. Just want to say Nick Starr's NBA potential.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I just want to run through. I've just pulled a sentence on each of the guys, or a dot point on each of the guys that could potentially be the next Starr NBA and where I think they're at. So I thought I'd just run this past you.
Guys who are in the NBL and where they charting in the NBA?
Yeah, like, do they have a chance? Are they gonna get there? Okay, so Usman Jiang, I think he showed lots of improvement over the year, and he'll definitely get a chance at tremendous upside potential. That's gonna
slender,
get him a long
big scorer. Yeah, he looked rubbish at the start of the year, but what you like is the actual. It's almost better that he was rubbish.
Yeah, you see improvement.
Oh wow, potential improvement. Yeah, for sure. So he's gonna go high, top 10, I would think.
Yep,
that's probably a bit high. Top 20.
Hugo Bassol. I think he was streaky and good, but he got worse over the season. He went here the opposite. Down.
He got worn down physically, which seems strange because Dieng did the opposite, who's very slender. But the problem with Besson is, what is he, 6'4", 6'5"?
Something
not
like
a
that.
Huge body, not a small body. Great feel for the game. I quite like him, but you're looking at late first round at the best.
Yep. Mojave King, he is cooked. He's got no chance to even stay in the NBL. Let alone get to the NBA.
It just hasn't come together. I don't understand what. So with the NBA guys, you want to sort of have a baseline of talent, and then teams go, oh, like the swing skill is 3-point shooting or size or athlete, whatever, you know?
Yep.
Mojave King, I'm not seeing like, oh, Mojave King does this well, and if he can acquire this, he'll be. I just don't see.
Yep.
I don't get it.
No, he's going nowhere. Luke Travers. I don't think his shot.
Huge regression.
I don't think his shot's good enough to get him there. I think that was always going to be his weakness. I don't think he's done nothing to prove that to be different. And I just don't see. I just don't see it. I don't see him being good enough. But
he just also, he's a little bit positionless. Wildcats have had a bad season, and he's been a big time player in it. Not as young as the other guys. I think he's a wee bit older. I forget now.
I think he's still pretty young.
He's still young, but not. He's not like 18. You go, ooh.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, 17. Oh, he could be something. He's kind of now entering whatever age. I forget what he is, but
21.
I liked him a lot. But here's the problem: he does himself no favors because signing in Perth, probably should have gone to college. Probably should have done a bunch of different things differently. Got in front of scouts a bit more.
Yep.
Also, it might sound really silly, but it's a big difference between being Perth and being in the East Coast of the NBL because then you've got like. You know, Illawarra was there with Hampton, and da, da, da. It's a lot easier to get to for people from Los Angeles. Perth's a huge trip.
Yep.
Sounds silly, but you know, and then you're on a away game, you don't play as well, but that sort of stuff. But also, he just doesn't pop. Like he's never had a highlight play. His dunks are soft and stuff. It's like you're playing for your life here. It just doesn't feel that way. Yeah, sorry.
Ariel Porty.
I love this guy.
I love him too.
Huge big body, good instincts. But how could he not be a late first round pick? I mean, you look at, I was watching the Phoenix Suns today. They had JaVale McGee out on the court.
Mm.
Huck Porty's a younger version of him.
Yeah.
Not Gobert's a stretch, but you know, that mold. And Like, if you've got a late pick and you need some big guys on the floor, he's a pick for sure.
So I love his game. He's had so much improvement. I actually hope he comes back to the NBL for year two of the deal. I'm not sure he will, because I think he might get drafted, but I would love to see him back in the NBL for another season. I think it'd be really cool.
They might. I'm hoping that his camp gets wind that, you're borderline first, borderline second. Why don't you stay another year at the NBL? And let's get you in the first round, because then you get a guaranteed contract. Getting drafted in the second round is like, cool.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get a contract. Yeah, it's like a gumball machine. Maybe you'll get a contract. Maybe
you won't. Ben Pepper got drafted in the second round. There you go. There's a throwback for you. Last one, Justinian Jessup. I think he's really good for the NBL, but I still don't know if he has the strength to play NBA basketball.
I disagree. I think he's got those broad shoulders. I think he can shoot it. He can shoot. Do you think he is a good shooter? I think
he is a great shooter. Great shooter.
To me, that's what's going to get in there. He's got a skill that's NBA level, and that's good enough for like the 10th off your bench. 8th, 9th, 10th off your bench.
So you reckon he'd be what? Oh, he's drafted. He's already been stashed, hasn't he?
Whether he goes. Yeah, he's been stashed. But I think he'll be impactful when he goes over there in that role off the bench, for sure. I really like him.
That's all the players I had. And I don't think I missed anybody.
Nah. Let's quickly do the next round and get the heck out of here.
All right.
There are some games. This round is fun. We've been rubbishing. We've been poo-pooing rounds of late. This is no poo-poo. This is very good. Give me the best first game you got.
Perth v Illawarra.
Friday, 22nd, 9:30 p.m. on the East Coast. That's going to be a good game.
A lot rides on that game. A lot of pressure.
Depends. So if Perth needed, do you know the circumstances? If Perth lose, what happens? If Perth wins,
there are so many variables. I just encourage you to follow Statman on
Statman 74.
Yeah,
that was bless his heart, but he must be the biggest nerd because it's like, Perth have 561 options, and if they win, I was like, oh my God,
bless him.
Unbelievable level of detail. I didn't mean to put you down, Statman. I think what you do is amazing, but I think objectively that's nerd behavior.
I'm here for it. Don't worry.
I read it. I think I may have given it a like, and I encourage everyone to follow him. So there you go.
That's the first thing.
Who are you picking?
I'm picking Illawarra.
Really?
No Vic Law. Well, I'm presuming no Vic Law, but even with Vic Law, I'm still picking Illawarra.
This is my pick.
This is Gorgian's. God, this is just Gorgian's wet dream. Coming to Perth, destroying their chances. Like, he's been waiting his entire career for a circumstance like this.
I'm predicting a Wildcat bounce back. I think they're going to rally against management. There, I've said it. And there's nothing like a spurned team. I think this team's been run to the muck. They had a good second half against Cairns. I think this is where they turn it around. They've got talent on. This is proviso that Law plays, right? Which is looking iffy. If he doesn't play, they're going to lose. They're not good enough. They have no replacement in his position.
No.
If Law is playing, I think they win. And I actually think I hope they win because it steadies their season, but I also think they will. It's a long trip for Illawarra. Long trip.
What's your next game?
Next game. I've got Saturday the 23rd, 5:30 p.m. Tasmania host Melbourne. Depending upon results, that could be interesting.
Yep.
Who are you tipping? Actually think Melbourne, I think Tasmania for sure. I think Melbourne are going to rest. They've locked up first seed. They don't really care who their opponent is. They'd prefer it to be Tasmania.
Yep.
So they want to lose. So they're going to rest Golding. They're going to put their feet up. Yeah. So that's, if you're a betting person, I will be laying a bet on Tasmania. There, I said it.
There we go. Well, I'm not such a cynic. I thought Melbourne would win. I just, in honest basketball, I would say Melbourne will win. But I take your point. Next game, Sydney.
Sunday is going to be fun.
Sydney versus Illawarra. You got that one?
You bet I do, but here's the problem. I've got Sydney winning it. I'll just jump in and kill the mood. Simple fact is Illawarra. Over to Perth and then back for a Sunday game.
That's killer.
Yes, that's a long road trip in a short period of time.
It's a mid-afternoon game as well. It's not even an evening game.
That's just dreadful scheduling from the NBL. Yep. Brutal. You agree, or you think Illawarra are going to win?
No, I've got Sydney to win that one. Partly because of travel.
That actually makes me worried about that Perth pick first up, because Gorgia might be like, we're going to lose the second. Get the first. That was a light impression. I'm not doing impressions anymore. And then the other game I've got.
Well, you did the D-Ruck impression, so, you know, that was.
You want to do an impression?
I'm always here for other people's. I'm rubbish impressions. I like hearing others. If you could do another D-Ruck impression for Perth versus South East.
No. Perth, South East Melbourne, would this be a good game, do you think? I think Perth win it regardless.
I know what I said
about the travel, but it's one way.
Yeah, I've got Perth winning this one too, just because South East, they're just checked out. They don't care anymore.
Checked out, rubbish. They're over under 18.5. People had this team winning 19 games.
Yep.
They're going to win how many? 12? What, do you have the roster ladder there?
I don't, actually. I haven't got it up.
Who cares? Not enough. 18.5.
A lot less than what we expected.
Less than the Jack Jump. What a horrible year.
Steady diet of Liafa and Adnan will get you that many wins.
Get all you can eat. We're going to Sizzler. Oh, my God. All right, we're done. We are out of here. We're just over an hour, which is longer than we liked, but these things happen. Mitch, just lastly, as the music is playing, I'll edit it in. Mitch Creek cost Mogul Sports some money in the presser saying, I'm not leaving South East Melbourne. They would have been like, well, we'll field offers, but yeah, you'd like to stay at South Melbourne, but yeah, well, listen, come on, Mitch Creek, don't do that. You got to get the money.
It's a business.
Yeah. Imagine if he leaves. He won't. All right, Andrew, such a pleasure. Everyone out there, join the Discord. Andrew, tell them about Discord.
Discord, yeah, it's where you talk to other basketball fans. It's really turning into something pretty cool. Just go to NBL.
It's wild.
NBLpocketpodcast.com, scroll to the bottom. There's a little basketball, blue basketball icon. Click that. Should get you into it. It's pretty easy.
There were 28 messages just today. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's good fun. And you've got places you can hang out. If you just want to talk about your team, hang out in your team's chat.
Yep.
If you want to talk about everything, go there. You know, if you're a Patreon, go to the super secret Patreon only, you know, VIP section behind the velvet.
And people, what's best about it? Is I barely talk on there. I'll come in late to the party, like, hey guys, where's the keg? I'll pump. I'm always late. I'm late to the party. So everyone else gets a voice rather than us two. Yeah, we're in, you know? It's good fun. Enjoy it.
It is good.
All right, everyone. Thanks again, Andrew. Always good to speak.
Enjoy the final round. We made it to the end of the season.
I know, right? Holy moly.